welcome to Around and About Chattanooga. I am your host, Michael Edward Miller. It's Wednesday, September 27th, and first thing on the show today, I'm speaking with a Southern writer whose debut novel is winning praise from NPR, Kirkus Reviews, and other critics, and I'm also speaking with the Chattanooga actress who narrated the audiobook. Published in August, If the Creek Don't Rise is set in Appalachia, a fictitious town called Baines Creek in 1970. Sadie Blue is an illiterate, pregnant teenager who's been married for only a couple of weeks when she realizes she must get free from her abusive husband. To do that, she'll need help from other people in the town, particularly other women. A review on NPR.org says this novel by Southern author Leah Weiss paints a fascinating, gripping portrait of the interconnected and often unseen ways people help each other get by in a remote town. And it really is gripping and sometimes brutal. The novel begins from Sadie's point of view, saying, "I struggle to my feet, straighten my back, lift my chin, then he hits me again." In the opening scene, Sadie resolves to do something about the abuse. Her plan isn't clear yet, but she vows her husband will be sorry. She also thinks back on the hard life she's had and thinks about her father, a man she loved despite his many flaws. Here's Kate Forbes reading the audiobook.
"Daddy hung bones on the walls inside our house, like some folks hang giveaway calendars or pictures of Jesus. They were mostly dried-out skulls he found hunting or tending the still. He ran twine through their empty eyes and wound the twine on a 10-penny nail high on the wall. He had the skulls of fox, bear, bobcat, and panther, and the ribcage of a bear. Daddy even had a man's skull in the lot. Found it in a cave near a rock slide that pinned the poor soul down till he wasted away. Said it was likely a miner and a dreamer looking for rubies and stones. At night, under moonlight streaming through the front window, those bones glowed like pieces of ghosts. Granny won't set foot in our house because of Daddy's bones. Said it was a heathen thing to do. Said it won't natural. I asked Daddy why he brought such things inside when nobody else did. He grinned and said, 'One time these bones was wrapped in flesh and muscle and brains. They might have fought a good fight to the end. But in the end, even the smart ones is just bones with all the fight gone out. Looking at it makes me think different about power and petty things. I hear he don't start hanging bones on the wall till Mama left. Some folks say Daddy was a peculiar soul. Some said he was a thinking man. He was funny, gentle, and always a pinch of sad the years I knew him. 'Cause the pitiful truth is, he got nothing from loving Mama, except me left behind. I think it was a broke heart that killed him, mostly 'cause Mama left him with a baby girl who lately looked too much like her.'"
That's Kate Forbes reading the audiobook of If the Creek Don't Rise by Leah Weiss. I spoke with both of them recently at Starline Books in downtown Chattanooga, where they were doing a reading and book signing. Kate Forbes is a Chattanooga native, a professional actress who's performed on Broadway, in regional theaters, and in movies. She's also an audiobook narrator. She estimates she's recorded around 200 books. Leah Weiss is a Southern writer born in North Carolina and raised in the foothills of Virginia's Blue Ridge Mountains. She retired in 2015 from a career as an executive assistant to the headmaster at Virginia Episcopal School. Her novel, If the Creek Don't Rise, began life as a short story she wrote in 2011. It was for a contest, and she had to write something with the opening line, "I struggle to my feet." Out of that contest, from that writing prompt, came the novel. The opening scene, Sadie's husband beating her, Sadie reflecting on her difficult childhood. I've read very few stories like that, which begin in such a dark place, and so I asked Leah Weiss about it. We were speaking downstairs at Starline Books, and in the background, you can hear the crowd walking around and the wooden floor creaking overhead.
The opening, I mean, it's a very stark, very grim opening. It opens with her being beaten by her husband. She starts revealing some very disturbing things about herself and her life. When you were first trying to get this published, get an agent, did you get any kind of feedback or pushback on that, saying, you know, if people read something this dark right at the beginning, they're not maybe going to want to read the rest of it?
You know, this has been a surprise in a way, and I've discovered why it is working. Yes, the opening is dark. The second chapter is Gladys Hicks, her grandmother, which is dark. Then finally you get a little bit of relief. But I think what I have intentionally brought to my writing is a lot of lyricism. My background is music. I was trained as a classical pianist many years ago. My grandfather was a concert violinist. So rhythm and music and the musicality of beautiful writing was a very specific goal of mine. I wanted to be not the person who wrote the beautifully written book or the one who wrote the beautiful story or the great story. I wanted to be both. And I would like to, because I read out loud all the time when I'm writing, and I deliver a punch in my writing, and I have had so many people capture, you know, be able to relate to that, and that I think that creates maybe a feminine air around it or something, and maybe hope around it. But this is the opening of my little short story, and I'm particularly reading it in order to note the rhythm of it, because the first five words had to be, I struggle to my feet. I struggle to my feet, straighten my back, lift my chin, then he hits me again. This time I fall down and stay down while he counts. 8, 9, 10. He walks out the trailer door and slams it hard. The latch don't catch, and the door pops open. I lay on the floor and watch Roy Tupkin cross the dirt yard and disappear into the woods. My world's gone sideways again. So that delivery of that intentional rhythm, I mean, it not only gets you going and pulls you forward, but I think it dresses it up in a different feeling of something ugly. I have read books before that I've had to stop because the ugliness was just uncomfortable for me. I don't think I ever go that deep in this book at all. But I also wanted to write authentic characters that I felt were bad. There are bad and good people in the world. And I was very careful to always respect these people. And I think that comes so much from my mother's background, where she always came. She was poor by a lot of definitions, but she said we were rich in all the right ways. And I think that's what I found in a lot of these characters, is there's still a richness in them, in the way they live life.
And your mother, she grew up in the Appalachians in a community, I think, without electricity. Tell me about how she kind of inspired some of this story.
Well, she wasn't actually born or raised in Appalachia. Oh. She was born in eastern North Carolina on a tobacco farm, one of 15 children, no running water, no electricity. And it was the happenstance of her life that led me actually to write. I had a friend who dared me to write. He said, you have such a beautiful way with words. And my question to him was, what would I write about? And my mother's life became a focus. So I would take my little tape recorder over after school and interview my mom, and we laughed and had fun, and she just thought it was just a fun thing to talk about something that she didn't think anyone would ever really be interested in. And as sadness would have it, she died 4 months later from lung cancer, and so I was left with amazing information that I spun into some memoirs that did get published. So then I had a strong love interest. Jim Butler had been in my life for 14 years, and he died 10 months later from cancer. So those two vacancies not only gave me something to write about, but they gave me huge blocks of time that they had filled that I no longer had filled. So I used my writing time to begin to develop my skill as a result of that.
That's Leah Weiss speaking downstairs at Starline Books in Chattanooga. You can hear the floor creaking as the crowd came in for a book signing. You're listening to Around It About Chattanooga, and we're talking about her debut novel, If the Creek Don't Rise. The format of this novel is pretty unusual. The first chapter is written from the protagonist's point of view. Sadie Blue is her name. That was the chapter that originally started as a short story for a contest. But then, as the author added to the story, she wrote subsequent chapters from other points of view. Sadie's grandmother's point of view and other people in town, many of them women. Meaning Weiss had to develop a different literary voice for different chapters,
and then Kate Forbes, who narrated the female characters in the audiobook, had to come up with distinctive voices as well. Here's more of our conversation.
The specific format of this, it's very unusual because it's first-person chapters from all these different people, and you rarely see a novel in that. What was the evolution of that structure?
Well, the little short story that won back in 2011 began with a five-word prompt, I struggle to my feet. So there lies the first-person present tense. But it goes a little deeper than that. I'm very good friends with Kathleen Grissom, who's a New York Times bestseller of The Kitchen House and Glory Over Everything. We used to do yoga together. We still walk together. We're great friends. But at one point when we were chatting, not so much about our individual projects, Kathy said to me, you know, my favorite books are first-person present tense. There's an intimacy. There is a, I feel like I just crawl into the skin of those characters. And she said, I think you do a good job with that, because my little story had been first-person. And so she challenged me. And so at one point, I was kind of deep into one of the stories, and I went, oh, my heavens, this is third-person past tense. Let me go back and rewrite it. And when I did, the most interesting thing happened. Out of the switching to first-person present tense, there came out of that these amazing insight into these characters, their feelings, that was so far different than the original writing had been. So I thank Kathy Grissom for giving me that idea.
I mean, how did that work? How did changing the tense give you more insight into characters?
Well, if you even just the past tense alone, literally from its term, past tense, it distances you. So and Kate, this may be a perfect opportunity to do it. We're here today with Kate Forbes as well, who I'm so honored to have on my team. She has done the audio narrative of the six women's voices that are in the character in the book, and I have had the pleasure this past week of hearing that audio, and the. I mean, here I was tearing up and getting choked up at the deeper depth, I guess, of these characters due to her interpretation. So would you mind reading maybe an opening of one of the chapters and just to give a little idea? And then we can maybe talk about that.
Yeah.
Sure. And I guess I want to say as an actor, because I'm an actor in addition to a narrator of audiobooks, and how you're only really as good as your material. You can make bad material a little better. You can do a lot, but when you have good material, especially in first person, it is the most fun. It's just a delight. And I have to say, what I really love about Leah's writing is that there's still a sense that these characters are mysteries, even to themselves. Like, they're not all spelled out, and this is why I do, or because of my childhood, this. It's not that. It's something, I don't know, I just really enjoyed it. So what chapter should I?
Let's start with maybe Gladys.
Okay, we'll try a little Gladys.
And Gladys is our main character, our main protagonist, is Sadie Blue, a 17-year-old girl who, when I wrote that five-word prompt on my monitor, I struggled to my feet, she came to mind very distinctly. I knew this was a girl in trouble, but I also had some instinct that there was great hope for her. So this is her grandmother who raised her the bulk of her life. So you'll get a little idea of the salt from which Sadie comes.
Gladys Hicks, what's your skinny ass doing here?
Want to see if you was all right, that's all.
Sadie Blue stands at the edge of my yard and drags the toe of her sneaker in the dirt. A bright spot of sunshine holds her in its beam and shines through her skimpy dress. Her baby bump is the size of a honeydew. I don't need you checking on me, girl. This ain't your home no more. She takes a step back, and I feel a pang of regret, or maybe it's gas. I'm planted on my porch, hands on my hips, and bun wound so tight my ears hurt. I thought you was gone for good, now you legal and all. As usual, Sadie don't say much. Well, you're here. With weak permission, my grandgirl steps in the yard, and I turn and open the screen door. Like always, it slaps my heels when I enter, and I head back to the kitchen and the smell of last night's collard greens. Sadie comes in slow-footed, and I want to hit her upside the head, 'cause she's meek when she's under my roof.
Instead, I slide the iron skillet onto the burner rough-like and slap in a mound of lard, then bark orders. Peel potatoes and onions. Slice them thin. You slice them thick. I like them thin. Yes, ma'am. Thin. I cut my eyes to see if she sasses me. But Sadie slices thin, then scoops up the pile of potatoes and drops them in the hot pan. She jumps back when the grease pops. Her face stays empty. I plop down on the kitchen chair and my thighs settle over the edges. I sift through the thin stack of mail circulars with one hand and rub my knee with the other. Your joints ache, Granny? I don't bother to say. She sees how swole my knee is. I sip sweet tea and watch Sadie turn potatoes and onions, slice ham, and wash yesterday's dishes. There's grace about the girl. Like her mama long gone from here in this plain place, Sadie won't plain. And that galls me. I never got a speck of grace. I was born big-boned and grew tall in a family of runts, and I look down on folks ever since.
You're from here. How did you develop these different voices? How much of this is maybe voices that you actually heard growing up here in Chattanooga?
Oh, for sure. It's so... What's really nice about my recorded books, I'll just call it a little career, is that in my theater career, I've rarely gotten to speak with my native accent. I'm usually doing Shakespeare or have to learn some, you know, how to sound not like a Southerner. And because I started in New York recording books, they didn't have a lot of people who could do, you know, so I'm, you know, sort of one of their go-to people. So it is, it's such a... Such a thrill. Oh, I've definitely got one that is my impression of a cashier at Michael's, and that's all I'll say.
I imagine it's got to be challenging coming up with all these different character voices.
The wonderful thing about Leah's writing is that, and a good author, they do the work for you. So one of my challenges is not to overwhelm their voice. And I have to be careful with these little readings, because in the book we all get a chance to relax, and maybe my accent or choice of things doesn't overwhelm what she has written. I think that's the balance you want to strike. I don't want to just come out there and, like, do my deal and overwhelm what she's written. But in her words, she gives me what I need to work with.
Kate, when you're reading these different characters, I mean, how able are you to just really enjoy the story versus really being caught up in what you're saying and the way you're saying it?
That's a good question. I think the more I've done, the better I've gotten at letting things surprise me. Even though I've read the book before and prepared before, I need to be as discovering it as I read, the way one does in good acting or the way one would do if you're reading the book yourself and discovering these things. It's challenging.
That's Kate Forbes, a professional actress and narrator who did all the female voices for the audiobook of If the Creek Don't Rise. That's the debut novel from Southern writer Leah Weiss. And we recorded that conversation downstairs at Starline Books. You could hear the floor creaking overhead as the crowd gathered for the book signing. We're going to take a short break, and we'll have more with them in just a moment.
WUTC 88.1 is a community radio station, and we want to hear from you. If you have ideas or story leads for Around and About Chattanooga, you can give us a call at 423-425-2224 and visit us online at WUTC.org.
This is WUTC 88.1 FM, essential news, eclectic music, every day.
You're listening to Around and About Chattanooga. I'm your host, Michael Edward Miller. If you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with author Leah Weiss. We're talking about her debut novel, If the Creek Don't Rise. We recorded this interview downstairs at Starline Books, and the story is set in Appalachia in 1970, the story of Sadie Blue, a pregnant teenager who's been married only 15 days and resolves to leave her abusive husband. The novel is written from multiple points of view and reveals more and more about life in the town as some of the characters try to help Sadie. Weiss says she set the book in that time period for a reason. Partly, it has to do with a teacher who's an important character in the book, a teacher who helps Sadie learn to read and who inspires Sadie. Here's more of our conversation.
It's important to know that I set this book in 1970 for a very specific reason. Those of us of the age know that in the 60s was when both Presidents Johnson's and Kennedy kind of shone a light on the plight of the Appalachian people. It was on our evening news. It was on the covers of our Life magazine. And so that was an important awakening time, so I thought that would be a good time. But also 1970 was chosen because it preceded a lot of the strings and bureaucracy that current-day teachers have. This teacher in 1970 who came to instill curiosity in these students didn't have any other parameters except just to instill curiosity. So I liked that. She had freedom there to make her purpose a fun one.
Some reviewers have described this as noir. Others have talked about the feminist aspects of it and the fact that it's this female protagonist being helped by these other women in this community. How would you kind of characterize the story?
Well, you know, I think when I began writing years ago, my first writing was I was 57, and now I am 70. And I wanted to honor the wisdom of women in particular, and especially older women. Remember some time ago you used to hear that you became more invisible as you grew older. Well, I wanted to make sure in my stories that didn't happen. So that's one of the primary reasons is to really respect and to honor the women. And even if they're mean and complicated and have got a lot of flaws, they're still really authentic people.
The story itself, I certainly don't want to give away the ending, but overall, would you say, despite its darkness, this is a hopeful story?
Oh, gosh, it certainly is. In fact, there's lots of humor. There's lots of adorable moments in it, and those are very intentional. It's paced out so that you never quite found yourself marred, you know, down too hard. And, of course, the ending is superb. And I say that. It's a terrible thing for me to say, but it was a joyful thing that was the short story as well. And I knew that had to be the narrative arc to which I was going to be traveling in the story. And so it has certainly got lots of emotions in it.
You've got at least one chapter that's written from the point of view of the abusive husband. Why did you decide to do that? Why do you think people should see things from his point of view?
You know, that's a good thing. When I first started writing this book in earnest, committing myself to it and said, this is going to be the bulk of my time for the next few years, that was the one chapter I did not want to write. And I had gone to Wild Acres Writers Retreat up in the mountains of North Carolina, close to where the book is set. It's near Little Switzerland. It's a marvelous community called Wild Acres, and I was there for my very first writer's workshop. And I confessed to my classmates and the teacher, you know, I don't think I could write Roy Tupkin's story. He's just despicable. I don't know if I want to spend time with him. I mean, I could imagine myself late at night working on this and how unpleasant that would be. And Luke Wisnant was the teacher of that first class, and Luke said to me, he will surprise you. You owe it to your readers, but he will surprise you. And the thing that was truly surprising were the empathetic moments that as I'm writing this and as I'm wandering through his background, that I have these moments that clutch in my own heart, and I said, how would I have fared if I had walked those lines? So he is who he is, but he is, again, I think, a very authentic person.
And I'll just say, as a reader, you know, first approaching this book, I couldn't wait to see what would happen. I did not know what was going to happen. And that's pretty rare for me as well. So it's wonderful.
Thank you.
That was author Leo Weiss and actress Kate Forbes talking about the novel If the Creek Don't Rise. It's Weiss's debut novel, and you can find out more information about her at leahweiss.com. That's LEAHWEISS.com, leahweiss.com. Kate Forbes is a Chattanooga native and an actress. She's been on Broadway. She says she's done about 200 audiobooks. Her next show is coming up in New York in March and April. She's doing 12th Night at the Theater for the New Audience. You're listening to A Roundabout Chattanooga.